It is a beautiful season of life here in Payne County, America. You all, some of y'all wish you were here and could afford to live in Stillwater. You just can't. It's a great, as I was talking a couple weeks ago, it's a magnificent college town. Like, baseball season is in effect. There's softball going on. There's plays and concerts. College students having like music recitals. And they've put on all this professional work at the end of the year. And like you get to see engineering project people, you know, building things. It's just, I just love it. It's like, it is a creatively wonderful town.
I think so too. I always think it's like, it's the best of both worlds in the fact it's not very big, like 50,000 people with college students, but there's still so much. There's so much happening, sporting events, mm-hmm. concerts. Orchestras, you know,
people having babies,
drone, all of yeah,
that drone too. Races,
yeah, exactly,
yeah,
all sorts of stuff,
yeah, rockets
to the university,
yeah, yeah. There's a, I don't know where it is, but there's a place where they can like launch missiles, like college students. Tanner used to launch his rockets all the time,
probably at the university little airfield.
Oh, yeah.
Drone airfield.
Yeah, there's a really cool one.
Yeah.
Oh, all sorts of good stuff going on in Payne County, as well as, I mean, just so we had, and I can't remember the number. My numbers always get slipperier and slippier in my brain. We had 3 students get baptized at the Easter Vigil.
Correct.
And this was weeks ago. So weeks ago. But just to, 3 students then. Then the next week on Divine Mercy Sunday, we had a student baptized and 11 brought into the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, there were 4 or 5 students sprinkled over a 2-week period. Mm-hmm. And then a couple more just dropped in there on like at the end of like right before graduation weekend.
Yeah.
So there was in the well, I think low 20s.
I think so. Yeah. I think between 20 and 25 students becoming Catholic this year at St. John's.
Yeah. So down in Hugo, Oklahoma, Hugo, Antlers, Boswell, those 3 parishes, Antlers had, I think they had, their number was 14 people enter the church.
Wow. That's awesome.
It would be, you know, it's kind of like what we do with numbers, like, oh, the amount of seminarians.
You scale up.
Yeah. Yeah. The amount of seminarians we have for the same population as Los Angeles, they would need like 250 seminarians.
Mm.
For the, like Antlers Boswell, if they have 10 people become Catholic, it's like Holy Family Cathedral having 110.
Mm.
Just
yeah, good for Antlers.
Yeah, good. Father Todd Nance down there, and some of the, you know, these little parishes are just starting. You know, a priest goes there and just like, okay, we're going to evangelize, and that's what they do. It's really beautiful to see that take place. I need Selena to send me those pictures. By the way, she had these pictures and she took them. They're beautiful pictures of the Easter Vigil. And then she just every time I ask her, she's like, "Oh yeah, I'll do it." I'm like, oh, "You're never going to do it," and she's like, making promises she can't keep. Anyway, so just pray for our students here, especially as they graduate and they go off, because you know there's a couple weddings. You're in a wedding. You're in Trevor and Molly's wedding this mm-hmm. summer, and they I think at one point in time the numbers we counted up, there were 30 people, 30 OSU St. John alums working for the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City / Diocese of Tulsa. Somewhere in their offices, and then they're.
Does that include previous employees too?
Well, no,
I'm sure it does.
Yeah, I mean, right.
There's a lot of turnover with young professionals.
Yeah,
always moving on to other things. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
So there's a good number. So pray for these college students, especially as they go out and they try to find life and go out to work and. Starting families and getting married and having babies. It's a beautiful time.
Yeah.
College ministry.
I'm in there.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. You're in there. Are you 27 still?
Yep, 27.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
Since the last podcast, so 27. Don't need to give out my birthday though. That's fair.
Yeah. It's leap year, isn't it?
Leap day.
Leap day.
It is a leap year this year, but my birthday is not.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So you have 365 more guesses.
I'll get to it by the end of the show. Okay. We talked about last week, Clay, since you're the interim not pastor. I was the interim pastor. You're not. You're the interim mouth on the mic.
Yeah, we could have a running list of things that could get me excommunicated. I said on the podcast.
Interim pastor at St. Francis. I don't know if you could get
Father Carey laid hands on me.
I didn't. I did not. Okay, so we talked about last time about dads. Any other suggestions for dads, fathers, and helping them grow in their faith life? We gave books, podcasts, leisure, which we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about it from a different perspective than Father O'Brien and I have done on past episodes, because we've talked about like priestly leisure and pilgrimages and, you know, like leisure, some of the leisure, the basis of culture. I know that you like Franz Gutenberg.
Franz Jägerstatter.
That guy. And then you like Edith Stein. Lichtenstein.
Well, I haven't read much of her, but
Adrian von Speyer. I'm just saying every German name I know.
I'm not read any of her.
Donald Dusseldorf.
I do like Josef Pieper.
That's him.
Josef Pieper is the man when it comes to 20th century philosophers.
Yeah,
and people talking about leisure.
I mean,
he wrote. Leisure is a basis of culture.
He wrote a couple books. So if like people are listening out there and they're like, I really want to read something. He wrote one on the faith, hope, and love.
Mm-hmm. Which he has a lot of work on the virtues.
Yes.
And so he has if you're not familiar with reading too much philosophy, I'd recommend his shorter stuff, which are very palatable. So like they're like 90 pages, a lot of this stuff. They're really essays, but
90 pages of like eating.
It's dense stuff.
Eating chocolate with like
better than
whole milk in it.
Reading is like 200 page works, or like plus. And so like a brief reader on the human virtues. And then what we're mostly going to be touching on today, which is Only the Lover Sings on Art and Contemplation by Josef Pieper. So it's just a series of a couple of his essays on leisure and art and contemplation and how and culture and how they all kind of swirl together.
Yeah. Let's just dive into it.
Great.
Because this is one of the things I like doing with students when we go on pilgrimage and on mission trips. But mostly I take students, you know, the focus missionaries. We went to Costa Rica this past spring for the mission trip. And it was... You know, when someone's like, oh, you're going to Costa Rica? And I was like, this is not a total incluso. This is not a all-inclusive. Like, I slept on a tent. I slept in a tent on a concrete pad on the back patio of a family's abandoned house.
Yeah.
Okay, now was the beach 40 yards away? Yes. Was there also cow and dog fights at 4 o'clock in the morning? Yes. Was it 85 degrees? At night and 115 during the day? Yes. But every morning, I would go down to the beach and I would pray my holy hour there. And you get to see like the sunrise at 5:30 in the morning while looking out to the Pacific. Or not to the Pacific, but we were backwards. We were next to the Pacific looking backwards east. Like it is. Anyway, so whenever we go on pilgrimages, leisure, basis of culture, hit it.
Yeah, well, I'd just say, leisure, the basis of culture, that's a big thesis, I would say. It's like, think about like what culture is and the basis of it being leisure. And you may be thinking like, leisure, what? It's not, like, not that important.
Yeah.
I think most people have a misconception, and I myself did before reading Pieper, had on what leisure was and what rest is supposed to be, especially from like the Catholic perspective.
So it's not sitting around watching football on Sunday?
Well, it could be that.
Okay. Just, God, check it out off the list. I'm done working. Yeah.
Well, I think the perception, yeah, like you just mentioned, is like what leisure is in relation to work. And I think most people think, I need the rest so I can work again. It really should be the other way around. Like I work so that I have leisure.
I work so I have leisure. Okay.
Yeah. So it's not the other way around. It's not I have leisure. I don't rest to work again. I'm not for work, right? I am a human being with innate dignity and value. My work is something I spend my time doing that I get paid the value that it is, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm for something more. If that makes sense.
This is
Pieper's argument. He's like, I'm just
because Pieper's alive in what years?
He's alive most of the 1900s, most of the 20th century. He was born in the early 1900s and died in the late 1900s.
Yeah, and
he lived in Nazi Germany,
which the motto of all the Nazi concentration camps in Poland, even in Germany, said "Arbeit macht frei," work makes you free.
Right, which is a lie.
Which is yeah.
And it was a lie then, and it's a lie for us. Think of like Enuma Elish, the Babylonian creation myth, right? Yeah. And juxtaposed to Genesis, like in Enuma Elish, we're created out of the blood of another god to be slaves for the gods. Like we're created for work. That was their experience. And it's like, and in Genesis, we're created differently, right? We're created for God, right? We're created to know him and to love him. And our work is sanctifying, yes, and holy, yes, but it's not all we're about.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. So keep going.
Right. So, so leisure has to have something and an activity that is valuable in and of itself, right? So, like work, you're paid in work. You do something that is not intrinsically valuable. Like you're paid what your value is, right? So, if like you're a plumber, you go to do your job. Right, you paid what the value is, but in leisure, you do an activity that is valuable intrinsically, right? So, what would that activity be? Is the question, and the answer is contemplation, right? And contemplation is that activity of which is valuable in and of itself, just for the. For the people at home, just to clarify, what would you say contemplation is, Father?
Contemplation is one is the meditating and thinking of things outside of yourself, to allow them to, maybe not to be in a lot of motion, not to be in a lot of motion because. Then it makes the mind sort of act. It's maybe sitting in a stillness.
I think definitely. I think
tranquil.
Like a precursor to contemplation is silence. To enter into contemplation, you have to have silence. Not just like atmospheric and environment silence, but like silence of the mind as well. Mm-hmm. But like meditation and contemplation are different. I know it took a couple times to pass Latin for you, but
thank you. I'm glad. Thank you for insulting me on this on my podcast.
Yes, of course.
Interim pastor
host. Keep it there. But meditatio, root word for meditation in Latin, is to think. It's like when you do a scriptural meditation, you are thinking about the scripture. But contemplatio in Latin is different. It means in Latin like to gaze and to behold. And so in that
to stare upon.
Yeah. Just to and it's not like an active activity. It's not like meditation or my mind is working, right? Silence is mandatory for contemplation because it's more like listening, mm-hmm. right? You're just receiving. And obviously, like Our Lady is the exemplar of this, who just receives God's love. And obviously, her reaction is her fiat.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's why it's like the highest form of prayer, as like it says in the catechism, is contemplation. And so, and we see this, and it's just an encounter. It's an encounter with something, right? And I think the most prevalent example in all of our lives is the Mass. It's like we're called to contemplation in the Mass. Just think about after the consecration, you know, yeah, you raise it up mm-hmm. and behold, right? That's the command. We're supposed to be beholding. Behold yeah. the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And so, yeah. Huh. And so, and that Mass is an encounter with a person, with the Trinity, right? And that Trinity is most true and most beautiful. And so, but we can contemplate more things than just God at Mass, obviously. But the idea of it is all of it's pointing towards that which is most true and most beautiful, which is God. But there are other true and beautiful things in the world. And yeah. And one of the, you know, think about any forms of art. You're talking about nature and like the sunrise of on the beach.
Yeah.
And things like that. These are things to encounter and things to behold, to gaze at.
Yeah, part of the church, why we designed it the way we did, is for students to contemplate it.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in Poland one year on a pilgrimage, I sat students down in the church of St. John Paul the Great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was sitting there. You know, I'd been into the crypt of chapels. There's all these chapels underneath from all these different Madonnas from around the world and beautiful chapels. And so I was sitting there and I was looking, and a kid came up and said, "What are you looking at, Father?" I said, "Well, I've been looking at this painting for the last 10 minutes and I can't figure out what it is." And then another kid comes up and says, "Hey, what are you guys looking at?" And the one guy goes, "Father's looking at surfboard Jesus." And I was like, surfboard Jesus? He's like, "Yeah, look," he's like, "on a surfboard." He's like, "It looks like Jesus is surfboarding through a cave with lots of stalactites."
Oh, it's icon.
And it was a painting, a massive painting, probably 20, 30 feet tall, 16 to 20 feet wide. It was behind the altar of the dragon and Jesus, like with his cross, and the cross was inside the dragon's mouth, and he was pulling people out of hell,
mm-hmm.
out of Sheol.
Yeah.
And it was just to sit and like to sit still whenever, because I can't come up with definition. When you like ask me what's contemplation, I'm like, I don't know, but I know yeah. it when I see it. Right. Like I know it when I'm experiencing it.
You've certainly encountered
it. Yeah. When you sit there and you're able to, in stillness, to sit and stare at something, and to allow that image to be imprinted in the mind, and to sit there in that stillness and that quietness, all sort of wrapped up together.
Yeah.
And then to sort of like enter into a different world.
Yeah. I think it's easy to encounter when it just consumes you. I think like we may have like experienced or something very grand, like a huge cathedral, or like you're on a mountaintop and you have like a big grandiose view. When it just strikes the heart.
Yeah.
And but I think there's a problem that Pieper describes, is that it's like
Pieper, we have a problem. And what is the problem, Clay Furley?
Is it
what Taylor Swift says? The problem is me.
Well, it is us as people in general. And he's writing this in like the 80s.
Uh-huh.
So I think of this and I think, oh, it's probably, it's worse now. Because what he says is we've lost the ability to see. So it inhibits our ability to contemplate. It's like we lost.
What do you mean? What do you mean by see?
It's like, well, he means not like our like vision, like 20/20, not just like biologically, but to our ability to recognize and encounter beautiful and true things. And he says, we've lost our ability to see, not because we don't look enough, but that we're always looking. So it's like, it's like we're over our eyes and our ability to contemplate is like overstimulated.
Because we're always seeing something.
We're always consuming.
Like, say, like videos and social media.
Correct. I think, talking about TV, you know, in the 80s. I think like he was mostly talking about that. It's like we're not patient. We can't wait in silence. We can't encounter. He gave this example of his own life. It was like he went to New York and on a boat tour. So then went on into New York, and on the boat back, they're all talking about their encounters with New York and like how the people saw like the Statue of Liberty and Times Square and the Empire State Building. And he's like, none of them really saw New York. None of them really noticed it. And he went and saw he talked about like the coffee shop he saw in like this alleyway and like these specific lampposts that he'd never seen designed a certain way. It's like, and then they said everyone went inside into their cabins on the boat, and none of them waited to see if for their eyes to adjust to the darkness and see the fish swimming next to the boat that like he did. And it was like, yeah, it's because we're always seeing, we're always looking. And so like we just, what we're supposed to see, what we're told to see, we see, but otherwise we don't notice. And that, and how that applies to art. And I think you can see the ramifications of this in Stillwater, especially. It's like in modern art in general, it's like.
Yeah, like what is that on the west side of town?
On 6th Street.
Wait, not to be confused. Yeah. Not to be confused with the giant robot cars. Those are awesome.
But well, it's clear what those are.
Yeah, yeah. Like what is the multicolored letter?
I'm not sure if it's a letter. It's just a swirly white thing.
I thought maybe it was like a badge from Star Trek or something converged with the Avery Brewery logo and five different A's.
I think the problem is it's like it's not supposed to be anything specific. To the artists, it's like for us, it's like, oh, whatever you want it to be. But I think it believes the lie that beauty and truth are purely subjective, and they're not. It's like people ask the question, like, what's your favorite movie? And it's like, there can be like a wrong answer to that. Like, there are like objectively good and objectively bad movies. And, and with all art and with all things that are truthful or lack thereof.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, with art in general, I mean, it's easy to see, especially like the thing on 6th and West.
If y'all don't live in Stillwater and you're listening to this, just Google art 6th and Western. I hope we didn't pay that much money for it. My tax dollars.
Tax dollars are there.
Tax
for
dollars
sure.
At work. Come and fix some potholes and putting junk in there.
Yeah. And and I think beauty is to be encountered. And the question is how, I guess. And there are certain activities. I think I think when I was mentioning how it's worse now, people are talking about TV. Now we have constant stimulation and we have no chance to actually meditate. I mean, meditation is a precursor to contemplation, right? Because you walk in the church, you may take it all in, but if you really know it, right? And if you've seen it before and you've thought about it before, it can really speak to you, right? It starts speaking to you. Just like if you know the scriptures, it's like, and you know them, it's all of a sudden they start talking to you. And so it's It's our job to listen, or to gaze, and to contemplate. And so he actually gives two like remedies to be able to see again.
Smash your iPhone or your internet phone.
Well, that's part of it.
Poke your eyeballs out. Go on.
The first one is obvious. It's like, stop looking, like stop like consuming, right? You need to pace yourself, right? You need to be able to, because before, you know, like 500 years ago, it's not like there's constant stimulation. You would see something, a play or a piece of music, and it wasn't always there, but you could come back to it another night or et cetera. But it had times, even like in like our times, it's like before, like all the season was released at once. Like, yeah, episode, you had a week to like consume and think about it and encounter it before you came back to it again. And let it like simmer.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's like you eat the food and you digest it, right? And it's like you consume it and you digest it, as opposed to just gluttoning, always eating.
Eyeball gluttony.
Yeah, it is.
When I go through the seven deadly sins, someone's like, oh, Father, help me with an examination of conscience. Or like they're going to confession. Mm-hmm. I'll go through anger, envy, greed, sloth, gluttony, pride, and lust. And I'll say, now gluttony and sloth are together. Mm-hmm. And gluttony is of the ears, of the eyeballs, of the mouth, of the hands.
Right.
And those things lead then one to be lethargic and sluggish, and they're slothful in their faith, or as the Hebrews say, the noonday devil.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, of like stop looking, allow the senses to not consume so much beyond their capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to be overstimulated. And so when, and we do it in the church, right? We cover our images in the last week of Lent. And so like when it's Easter and when it's time, they're revealed again. It's like the cross and all that it means is like reinvigorated. It's like it has all of its meaning again. It's
yeah.
Like, oh, those are wounds. It's like we're not desensitized anymore.
I'm trying to figure out how we should cover those images next year. Like,
yeah.
Should we not illuminate them?
That'd be good.
Keep them dark, mm-hmm. like the images. And then at Easter, it's like they get boom. Brightened up.
Yeah.
Because I have the ability to control all those lights on the upper walls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. That's part one. That's remedy one, which is really just first aid, right? You stop further damage. And part two is to create something. Right? That's
ooh.
His remedy. Because when you create something, like what an artist does intrinsically, it's not just self-exploration. I'm not just expressing myself, despite what you might hear, right? An artist sees something and with their skill, with their craft, are able to translate it. They see something beautiful or see something true, and they want to share that, right? And so... And that's the act of the artist. Now, I'm not saying you have to draw. Like, there's lots of ways to like to create. You could garden, like
carve something.
Anything. There's endless opportunities. And this, I think, calls to mind like John Paul II in his letter to the artist is like, we are all artists. We are all with God, like artists of our own masterpieces, which is our lives.
Yeah. Like, he was a poet and wrote plays. And
exactly. So he knew this. And so it's like, but what that does, it changes, it trains our eyes to see, right? And so, and then we can truly gaze.
Yeah.
It's just like for like, to be able to contemplate, to behold the Eucharist, right? You have to know what it is.
Yeah. And I, all of these things of meditation, contemplation, both on the natural level first, mm-hmm. then Pieper says, these things then lead you to the supernatural contemplation and eventually heaven.
Right.
The new heavens and the new earth. If you can contemplate the current heavenly kingdom, which Jesus says is the pearl of great price, is a wedding feast. If you can contemplate these beauties of nature and flowers, then you can launch yourself into heaven. Man,
boom.
Dude, we're running out of time. Yeah, chop it up, baby. Anyway, that's another Pastors of Pain show. Have a beautiful day. We'll see you next week. Peace.